Welcome to another episode of the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Let's go up the down staircase in the outdoor, make sense of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Glad to have you joining me one more time. I did that whole open on one breath almost. I mean, that's pretty good for an old geezer like me. And speaking of being an old geezer, that's really what this episode is about today. I think there's a very narrow line of people who will listen to this and understand what's to follow. You have to be of a certain vintage, I think, to understand some of the serious points I'm about to make and the arguments I'm about to undertake and all the kind of stuff that goes along with that. This is of the highest order. It is really, really important to understand where I'm coming from on this, because I don't. It's a beautiful morning here in Chicago, and I'm up early as usual. I was outside in the yard watering the garden and the flowers and things like that. I have a little war going on with one of the squirrels here, because you start feeding a squirrel, right? You think you're doing good because it's the winter time and the squirrels need a little help. And then it gets a little warmer. You keep feeding them. They keep coming. You keep feeding. They keep coming. Pretty soon, they get bigger. So there's this one squirrel, I call him Junior, who apparently, you know, had enough of me not giving him enough peanuts at some point. It's like trying to work its way through the screen. That was enough of that. Junior is still alive. Don't take me the wrong way, but he's just been totally cut off. Let's just put it that way. When I was out in the yard watering, like I said, at one point I got a little thirsty, so I unscrewed the top of the spray nozzle. And I just drank from the hose. I took my life in my own hands and I drank right from the hose. Now, the hose is new, for the record. I've had some hoses for years. And if you're someone who does yard work like I do, you kind of, you know, limp along with the equipment you have. But when you buy a new one, you can tell it was time for an upgrade. And the other hose that I had, you know, you can only put so many hose connectors in and so much duct tape on them. And after a while, it's time for a new one. So this is a brand new hose. And I couldn't wait to see and feel and taste how the water was out of this brand new hose, ice cold, and it did not disappoint. I got to tell you, I was just gulping the water down, and I had a bit of a flashback, which tends to happen for me when I'm immersed in things that remind me of other times. And I had this memory pop right up in my brain of being in my home in Chicago when I was a kid on Bertow Avenue, this big old Victorian type house my folks had bought in '66. And there was a hose that was attached to the side of the house, and you know, it ran out in the back. My mom would use it to water and stuff like that. And when my dad put a pool in the yard, he used that hose. It took 9.5 months to fill it, but he used the garden hose to fill the pool. And I can clearly remember one time he was filling the pool, and I took the hose right out of the water in the pool itself, and I drank out of it and put it back. And that was what I thought about this morning. And then I thought, nobody does that anymore, or do they? I mean, isn't it like a bad thing to drink out of the hose? So, and the reason I say that is because everything has changed so much since I was a kid. But so I came across this article, I was looking it up, and it talks about this hose thing. And it went in great depth. Let me just kind of read this. This is from a couple years ago. Off the makefoodsafe.com website. We all did it, but was it safe? Drinking from the hose that is immersed into a pool? No. On a hot summer day, it may be tempting to drink some cool water from a garden hose or even the sprinklers. As parents, there are many experiences from our childhood that we would love for our children to experience. A few of those things may seem like a rite of passage that we feel every child must do. However, the many advances of science and technology have deemed several practices from our childhood as harmful or not safe. One of my childhood memories, the author writes, is drinking from the garden hose outside the house. When I look back on it, it was easy access to a water source that all of us kids could rely on for those long, hot summer days playing outside. But let's be real. We've all done these things. However, is it actually safe to drink water from a garden hose? I regret to inform you that it isn't. And then it goes into great detail of why that is. And part of it is, unlike the plumbing in the house, the garden hoses are not designed or manufactured to deliver safe drinking water. Usually the water from your hose is the exact same water that's inside the home. The major difference is the way the water's carried. The pipes and fittings in the home are designed to avoid contamination because the primary purpose is to use it as a safe drinking source. Garden hoses, on the other hand, are not regulated by the SDW, or the Safe Drinking Water Act, which monitors the nation's public drinking supply. Water coming from a common garden hose is chock full of toxic materials that could be harmful to the human body. And it goes on to name three of these things that I could pronounce and the other ones I can't. Look, here's where it gets interesting for me. I suppose if you drank four or five times a day from a garden hose that has, what is it, lead, bromine, BPA, bisphenol A, phthalates, organotans, you probably, you know, might do some damage to yourself if you drank it all the time. This reminds me of, like, you know, the rats got cancer when they were injected with 9,000 gallons of Coca-Cola or something. So I'm thinking to myself, am I at risk now because I drank water 50 years ago out of a hose in Chicago? Goes on to talk about how to reduce the risk. Think about it. If the water from the hose is not safe to drink, then it's also not good for your pets. And it might transfer nasty chemicals to garden produce. Hold on a second. So now I got to worry about not only myself taking a sip of water, but the very vegetables and the flowers that I am using the hose to water them with may be harmful to the produce I'm trying to grow. I'm making a disconnect here somewhere. You buy a garden hose to water the garden, but according to this person, it might be transferring nasty chemicals to the produce. So I'm basically infecting myself because I'm eating tomatoes later. Okay. Because I know where all the tomatoes come when I buy at the Jewels, right? We know where all our produce comes from and it's all safe. Uh-huh. Here's some safety tips if you do want to use a garden hose. Let the water run for a few minutes before using the hose to water your plants or fill a swimming pool. You should let the water from the hose run for a few minutes. By doing this, you can reduce the toxins in water. It's not good for water to sit in a hose for long hours. Letting the water run allows the hose to be flushed out before utilizing it. Be careful where you put that water, though. If it goes on the grass, you could be up shit creek later. Keep the hose in a dark, cool place. Never leave your hose under the heat of the sun. Does this person not live in Chicago? Has not been out here when we got the sun pounding on the backyard? Are you kidding me? Make sure it's stored in a safe area. Warm temperatures plus sunlight can increase the degradation rate of the polymer, which can cause chemicals to leak into the water. By storing the hose away from the sun, you can slow down that degradation process. I don't know anybody that takes the hose, uses it, drains it, rolls it back up, puts it away in a cool, dry place, and then takes it out and does it again the next day? Okay. Next, mind the fixture. Brass is an unregulated metal which can contain lead. Most outdoor fixtures are made of brass. Even though you might think your outdoor fixtures are safe for consumption, it could still contain some trace heavy metal contamination. If possible, be mindful and change your fixtures regularly. I buy mine at the dollar store. Made out of plastic. It's yellow. Reminds me of Gary Prang's mom's hose from back in 67. So I don't have to worry about the brass thing. Here's an interesting one. Choose a safer hose. There are safe alternative natural rubber hoses on the market. Natural rubber hoses do not have any toxic plasticizers or toxins like traditional hoses. But before you buy that new garden hose, thoroughly read the product descriptions. Select a hose that has a low environmental impact and safe for drinking water. In general, this type of hose is safe to use and possible to drink from. However, it is still best to let the water run for a few minutes so that any undesirable chemicals or pathogens are removed. Finally, here's the summation. It's not safe to drink water from a hose, kids. What are you thinking? While there are ways to reduce the risk of contamination, it is so not advisable to drink from the garden hose. There are hoses, as been mentioned, labeled as drinking water safe, but they're more expensive than the traditional hoses. Might be very tempting and accessible to drink from a garden hose, but it's still best to walk to your kitchen to get a drink of water, even if it's from the tap. Try to invest in a filter to be installed on your tap water faucet. Bottom line, drinking from the garden hose may have been fun when we were younger, but now we know better, and when you know better, you can do better. And here's the kicker for Johnny. You can keep you and yours safe now. Stick to water bottles instead. I guess it would depend on what the water bottle's made out of, wouldn't it? Isn't there some sort of article on water bottles that could be leaking polymers or polyethylene or poly-whatever? Poly-want-a-cracker? Here's my point. I don't know how we survived growing up in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. I mean, if you think about how life was then, my mom was smoking when she was pregnant with me and more than likely having some highballs or martinis. Smoking and drinking, right? I mean, let's start right out of the womb. So I'm sure there are difficulties that come with it. I got it. But it was the norm back then. So how in the world did we get out of that? Forget the garden hose. If your mom was smoking and drinking, you've already beat the odds. We all can remember, especially those of us who have been around long enough to jump into a car and there's no seatbelts. Or very minimal. I mean, we would go to the movies. There'd be four or five of us, my sister and I and some of the neighbor kids, all crammed in the back seat of the car with no seatbelts on. I can remember climbing up in the back deck window and sleeping up there or riding back there. Nobody cared. Nobody cared. Not again, don't send me emails saying, John, things are... I know that. But I'm also saying that back then we didn't know better and we did okay. You know? Sleeping in the rear deck of the window was really cool. Or in the way back of a station wagon with the window down. Are you kidding me? It was a gas. How the heck we made it out of unsafe cribs that were painted with lead? No clue. No clue. Listen, there's always one in somebody. Like there's one out of a five or one out of 10 or one out of 50 or one out of 100. And when I look across the board at how things were when I was growing up, lead paint, of course, I don't know how anybody listening to this show made it alive. Think about what you had to build up in your immune system just to get past that. And nothing was childproof. There was no locks on the doors or the cabinets that I can recall. You could open up anything. You got a screwdriver? Click, get in, get underneath, and start eating some steel wool for breakfast. The world is definitely, and I always hesitate to kind of make this statement, the world to me has always been the same. There's just more of us and there's more information about us, which makes, I think, it look more scary than it really is. You know, when I grew up, there was Channel 2, Channel 5, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 11. And sometimes we get Channel 32 on the UHF television on Friday night to watch Screaming Yellow Theater. So you only had so many outlets for this information to get through. And it wasn't instantaneous. It wasn't a constant bombardment on our central nervous system like it is now. So the things that we did back then, you know, seem to be a little bit more unique. I don't know if they are anymore, but something as simple as walking to and from school alone by yourself. I don't remember anybody carpooling. I suppose somebody got dropped off here and there. Kids got on buses for sure now and again. But, you know, I mean, I was lucky. At my grammar school, I'd walk right around the corner. We just walked to school. Nobody, and you know, I suppose people had some of their parents tag along, but it just wasn't this helicopter hovering thing. And on the way home, you know, if you took an hour and a half to get home because you stopped and got a snack at JB's, you know, nobody cared. So I look at these things and again, they shouldn't have to be that special, but they seem to be, I suppose, on the surface. At least this morning, just sipping out of a water hose set off this flurry of remember when, you know, going to your friend's house unescorted, like for the whole day. Where you headed? I'm going over to Menzer's. Okay, see you later. I come back 7 hours later. Is it time for dinner yet? That was it. So from the kind of foods we ate, Beale's Bakery was right down the street. I had more sugar in the first 10 years of my life and 15 years of my life than I probably should have had, but we adapted to it. I mean, it's just the way it was. I have perfect teeth. No problem with sugar. The cereal was laden with sugar. The donuts are laden with sugar. The candy was laden with sugar. I mean, what are you going to do? And speaking of, you know, you just go to a candy store. There was a place right by our grammar school called The Nuns. And this was, it was like an underground bunker, as I recall, just a block or two away from the school. I don't remember how it started. All I remember is that we were all glad that it did start. And there were these nuns, I could not tell you the order. You know, they look kind of like, maybe like alien nuns to me. You know, you couldn't quite define them. They didn't look like Catholic nuns. They were like of some other order, like the order of sugar or the order of Snickers or 1,000 other candies. And so what they did is they had this little bunker type thing you had to walk down in, and one or two kids at a time could go in, and they had all this candy laid out. I don't know where it came from, but it looked real to me, had the right branding on it. And you'd walk in there with a dollar, man, you could load up. And what would happen is at lunchtime, we'd all go over there and load up on candy and then not eat our lunch. But these nuns would keep a hawk eye on you. But who would do, you couldn't even do that these days. They eventually shut them down. I don't know how long they were open, but there was no license to operate, as far as I know. That was not a quote-unquote real candy store. It was some nuns who made some side cash by selling candy to the kids in the neighborhood. It was there for a very long time. Another thing that I was thinking about is, you know, if I see somebody now riding a bike without a helmet, I think, yeah, man, go get it, go get it. I can't even imagine the times that I went out on my bicycle. Nobody wore a helmet then. They would think you're nuts, you know? And whether we were going from my house all the way up to Portage Park, there'd be 4, 5, 6 of us going for the swim for the day. And we'd, you know, just go right on the main drag with no helmets. Imagine that. Taking your life in your hands without helmets. People hitchhiking. I never did that. But I know a few people that did. I know one guy that went across the country. You could put your thumb out and off you go. And for the most part, it was okay. You know, you just hitchhike. How are you going to get there? I'm going to hitch. Again, living on the edge. And one of my big favorite things was that you could literally, my mom would kick us out in this out of the house, get out of the house during the summer. Just go. Just go with no cell phone. No microchip in my ass. Just go. So, you know, just leave. Yeah, just go. My mom would say, knock the stink off you. Go outside and play. And so we would go out at 8 o'clock in the morning, like on a Saturday like today, and be gone until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Maybe come home for lunch, hang out for a couple minutes. And the whole big thing was, of course, and I think there's this unwritten rule or law for people of a certain age that you just got to come back in when the street lights went on. I don't know if that's like wherever you're listening when you were a kid, if you know, the street lights came on, that was the universal, it was like the bat signal for parents. Those lights come on. My dad would say, when that front street light comes on, your foot better be at the bottom step of that porch. So to me, it was like a race at the end of the day, because with the time change and whether you know it would stay lighter longer, you never knew exactly when that light was going to come on. And I made it a game that I would kind of get towards the end of the block and, you know, be like 8:45 at night, something like that in the summertime. And when I saw that light go on, I'd sprint down the street and I'd hit that bottom step and I'd walk in, hit the bottom step, Dad. Okay, good. It was silly, but it was a lot of fun. And a simple thing like that was like this unwritten rule. We all knew, like lemmings, the lights went on, everybody's gone to their house. It's fantastic. So some of these things, you know, they're so simple and they seemed so innocuous back then. And supposedly, and again, I'm not saying you shouldn't do, like if you want to drink out of a garden hose like I do, I'm not telling you that you should or you shouldn't. I'm just making some observations here. And I find in a day and age where everything is under a microscope, that sometimes it's good to take the long view and look back on stuff that was not under a microscope. The simple pleasures of playing fast pitch all day with a 50-cent rubber baseball all day. Or just a couple dollars in my pocket and going over to Vito's to get a pop and a chip. Just to sit on the curb with your friends for a couple dollars for 4 or 5 hours on the street in Chicago. Or my mom would give me $8 or $10 by myself at the age of 10 years old. I'd walk down to the Irving Park bus stop, like at Irving and Keeler. I'd get on the bus, or sometimes I'd go all the way down to Addison, which was a huge stretch. But I got on Irving. I would take the Irving Park bus all the way down to Clark Street. And I'd get off at Clark Street. That's probably 3, 4, 5 miles. And then I would walk at 10, 11, 12 years old by myself to Wrigley Field to watch a ball game. Then I'd sit in line to get into the left field bleachers, buy a ticket. And then I would get and take the bus all the way back. No cell phone, no idea, except he went to the ball game and left about 8 o'clock this morning. There's something sacred about that to me, especially these days. It's like, I'll bet nobody in left field bleachers, the bleacher bums in 1969, for example, was wearing sunscreen. Sunburn was a rite of passage. Now, of course, we know that skin cancer is a serious problem. You know, it takes decades for that to catch up. My point was, back then, it was all about copper tone tan. You know, there was barely any kind of protection from that stuff. And we survived and moved through it. So everything from playing, you know, just catching the street to go into the park to hang out for the day. And the one time I really lived on the edge where I rode my bicycle, God, it's got to be 7 miles. And I got a flat tire. My buddy Vinnie Connor and I, my mom didn't even know where we went. But you always had that dime in your pocket. In case something went wrong, you could call home. And we got way out by O'Hare Airport. I don't know how we found our way out there. No helmets. And I got a flat tire. And I called my mom. And she said, where are you? And I said, I'm like Higgins and whatever. And okay, I'll be there in about an hour. In about an hour, she showed up at the Clark gas station we were sitting at. She had a 1955 Plymouth with 3 on the tree. No power steering. My mom drove it like a truck driver and swore like a truck driver. And never once, interestingly enough, did she ever ask me, as I recall, what are you guys doing way the F out here? We just went out and had a good time. Chicago, the whole area, was our playground. I got back, got a new tire, and I was back on the road the next day. So my rant here really is all about the simple things in life. As life gets more complicated, it seems, as we get caught up in the headlines, we sometimes forget the lifelines. The smallest little thing that could become such a great memory, I think, is the things that sustain me as life gets more invasive. I try to push it back as much as I can, like the guy who's cutting his grass next door. You might hear his lawnmower. But my final thoughts this morning are on this playground that I grew up in as a grammar school kid. It's called Belding Grammar School. And right next to the main school, there was this playground attached to it, and Hiram H. Belding School. And yesterday, I found my 8th grade autograph book and 8th grade graduation ribbon from 1973. It was just about this time. It was June 10th, I believe. And this is on the 5th, so it was about a week early, but from June of 1973. And that playground was my universe, and all of us that lived there and spent time there. It was the whole universe. It was the sum total of my consciousness, was what's going on at the playground. Everything emanated from that hub. And the memories there are so thick and wonderful and important to me that I often sit here when I'm working on projects or a book project or radio, and when my mind gets too stuck, I just sit back and I start thinking about some of those times. There was a guy there who was the custodian of the place, named Mr. Speck, and he had these immense gardens every year. He was an amazing guy, and so he was like the custodian of all of that. He was the guy that flooded the back of the park in the wintertime to make the perfect skating rink. He's the guy that cut the grass. He's the guy that painted things. He's the guy that grew these incredible gardens, as I mentioned, and vegetables and stuff. It was truly an incredible guy. And then the people that were in charge of the park, Mr. Atch, Ted Atchison, and Miss Winiger, Miss Winnie, they were like this tag team, a holdover from the 40s and 50s for sure. Even for sure, you know, when I started going there in the 1960s when I was a kid, they were old school. They were right out of Mayberry. Atch was this white-haired guy who, you know, just ruled the park with an iron fist. And when you were on Atch's good side, all was well in the world. And if you weren't, you got kicked out of the park sometimes for the whole summer. Oh, my gosh. Could you believe so-and-so got kicked out? If you rode your bike in there, expect Atch to come out of his office with a baseball bat and throw the bat in between the spokes of your bike and bust him up. Nobody would ever challenge Atch on that. There were certain rules, and we all knew the rules, and if you break them, this is the consequences. There was no lawsuits. If you fell and skinned your knee or you broke your arm, parents didn't come running up to the porch with a lawyer and say, you know, this is all wrong. None of that. They'd more likely smack you in the back of the head and say, what are you, being a dumbass? You know? So Mr. Atch was that guy, and Miss Winiger was just this gentle soul who, you know, again, I mean, she looked like a smaller version of Aunt B off Mayberry. And back then, the playground, the house itself, the field house, was split in boys' side, girls' side. And you'd walk into the middle and they have to go left or right. And boy, oh boy, don't you ever, as a young boy, get caught on the girl's side, you know, because you'd just be the ribbon of your lifetime. And they never met. Only time I was ever on the girl's side was when they had like a Halloween and both sides were open. And then it was this, wow, forbidden territory. I could go on the girl's side. What's going on over there? Well, the truth is it looked just like the boy's side. So one of the things that would happen during the summer, which I there's no way they'd even be able to pull this off now without it being on the news saying somebody's doing something wrong, is that once a year they would have Watermelon Day at the playground. And Watermelon Day was typically in late July, early August, when it was really, really hot. And Mr. Atch would go out and he would buy all these watermelons at farmer's market, probably a dozen or two, you know, maybe 15. And he would cut these watermelons and all you did was gorge yourself on watermelons. The fire department would come over, engine 69 would take a hose and a fire hose, hook it up to the backstop of the basketball net, hook it up to the fire hydrant and turn it on full blast. And there'd be a couple hundred skinny little almost humans running around under the spray of this fire hose just to cool off, shoving watermelon in our face, dancing around like all get out. And at one point, somebody would always, and the one guy I remember doing this was about 4 years older than me, this guy named Tommy Walden, huge guy back in the day. He was like 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", big basketball player. And Tommy Walden once took off his shirt, which was bigger than all the rest of our shirts, and he covered the sewer in the middle of the park. And all of a sudden, the water started rising. And we were starting to have our own swimming pool. So pretty soon the rest of us took our shirts off, covered over Tom's shirt, and it got deep. And, you know, for us, deep was, you know, probably 7 inches of water in the middle of the park. And it was raining down, and we're swimming around and shoving watermelon in our face. You know how many contaminants were probably coming out of that sewer as the water was backing up? Great times. Wouldn't trade them. Glad I had them. We had a guest on, or we have a guest coming up, I should say, on the bridge. Her name is Rose Crelly. And she is the friend of a friend of mine's daughter. Linny Heal is one of those people who grew up at that Belding playground. And her daughter Lizzie is an amazing singer, and Rose Crelly is an incredible violinist. And so we do Music Monday on the bridge, and Rose is someone who is a remarkable human being, grew up without electricity, grew up without indoor plumbing, grew up without any of the amenities that we would think somebody needs to succeed, and then went on to become this world-renowned violinist. And she lived in the Yukon Territory, adopted at 8 months old from Wuhan, China, by a family that lives in the Yukon, and then grows up without any of that stuff, no TV, no video games, no cell phones. And she says it was her focus without all those distractions. It was part of her success. And so I think of all the things I missed out on, and I'm really glad that didn't have all that, that my mom said, just get out of the house and go. I'll see you tonight. The fact that you had free rein to do whatever you needed to do until the lights came on, that you could ride your bike without a helmet on, that there wasn't a chip in your ass or a cell phone in your pocket to always check on you. And there was no such thing as, you know, all the things online meant you just went to the bank and stood online to get, or at the, you know, supermarket. So over time, we all adapt, some better than others, to the changes in life. The further I get away from those days, the more thankful I am that I had them and the way that I grew up and the people that I grew up with, and that we, you know, we learned early on about responsibility and doing the things that you needed to do in order to get through things, even if it just meant drinking water out of a fountain or a garden hose. At Portage Park, they had these giant cement water fountains, like with six spouts in it, six spigots. And more than once, I'd go to get a drink of water in there way up at Portage Park. There's like algae in the water. Wouldn't have been surprised if there was a salamander in there or a turtle. But, you know, you just go through that stuff. And so now I'm all about being safe and all about prevention. But come on, folks. If we're at a time where drinking out of a garden hose is like a high health risk, I'll take it. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.